Adversity, bring it. The struggle, I welcome it. Snooze on life, never that. I am Dave Regina, and this is the No Snooze Podcast. Come on. Welcome back, No Snooze Podcast, episode 172. As always, I'm in the booth with a new three. We have Paulie, PAX Boss, Russo, Claudio, The Voice, Valenzuela, and I am Dave, The Body, Regina. Very transparently, CV told me to slow down the intro, so hopefully that was slow enough for you, my brother. Paul, it's great to connect with you. So likewise. For you guys listening, I met Paulie about a year ago now, and your restaurant, PAX Romana in White Plains, TVB, PAX Romana in White Plains, has slowly become one of my favorite restaurants.
Appreciate
so
that.
Paulie Thank owns you. And operates that restaurant. Paul, welcome to the podcast, my brother.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. I need a caffeine shot right here.
Not a paid promo.
not a paid read. So the conversation, I really want to know, I guess, everything about you, right? Because we've sat down and we had a really good conversation, if you remember, at it was Tony Peck's fundraiser, right?
It was at Split Rock.
Yes, yes. Yep. So the journey, I guess, leading up to PAX Romana and getting into the food industry, where did that passion come from?
Well, it all started in 1986.
Let me tell you a story about yourself.
Actually, it did start very young. Maybe not as early as 1986, but that was the year of birth.
Pull it closer, dude.
Started when I was about, let's say, 4 years old or so. True story. My family, my parents, brought my brother and I to Disney World. And obviously, first time there, so young. But as soon as we parked, I don't personally remember this. My mother remembers this. That we had gotten out of the car when we had gotten to the hotel. And I was so taken back by the hotel and everything about it that I actually turned to her and said, I want to do this. Like, this is what I want. And it stuck. I mean, yeah, as you grow up, there's other things you want to do. Like, I wanted to be an archaeologist. I wanted to be an astronaut. Do this. I want to dig up dinosaur bones, you know. But the food industry just always resonated with me. And even growing up, I would watch the Food Network every day and
really
wanted to learn. Originally, I wanted to be a chef. You know, I was all about being a chef. But then as you learn the business, the chef side of it is it's an interesting side of the business. You know, I'd rather be front of the house, you know, on the floor with the people working that way. But yeah, I started when I was super young and just stuck to it. And then couldn't wait to work in it. You know, as soon as I could, I started working. And then as soon as I could get into this business, I jumped right in. And
wow.
Changed my life.
That's very interesting, though, because my daughter, she's 3 and a half now.
Yeah.
Right. And one, in terms,
you know,
of,
you know.
In terms of Disney World.
Yeah.
Right. I've been hesitant to take her in the past because I felt like she was too young. But now I feel like this 3 and a half going on 4 is a good age. So that's good to hear.
Yeah.
But then also she
you're
has
more
this.
Aware, I guess, than you think.
What?
I don't know. I guess you're more aware than you think.
Yes. So she has this kitchen that she loves. It's a play kitchen, obviously. And we got her fake knives and, you know, forks and pans and pots, pans, all the whole shebang. And she really enjoys cooking.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting to hear that at that age, though, you were already so aware of it and was able to.
Strange. But and even from the things that I do remember, even though I don't remember that particular instance, as I was getting a little bit older and still loved it, I do remember, oh, can you bring me to Barnes & Noble? Because I wanted to buy books about the restaurant business, you know, and remember, I still have it. I have to find it. But it was, I think the title was like, How to Open Your Own Restaurant. And I couldn't even read it. I didn't even know how to read it correctly. I was like, I knew I needed this book. It would make everything, all my dreams come true. Yeah. I need this book.
Yeah. So, talk to me a little bit about, so Italian, Russo.
Yeah.
Nice Jewish guy.
Mazel.
We had Tony Peck on here too. I said the same thing. He said Mazel Tov.
Same thing. I love it.
Love Tony. Italian upbringing, obviously. So like food at events and all that type of stuff. Did that play a part in your, you know, passion for it?
Very much so. My mother is an immigrant without aging her of maybe 51 years now. She immigrated here with her family when she was 12. You know, just like any other immigrant, came to this country for the American dream, a better life, work hard, provide for your family. You know, a different different breed of human, I feel.
We're very soft these days.
Very soft. We are very soft these days. We're very spoiled. More than we realize, you know, compared to our ancestors and everything they went through. But so, yeah, came here for a better life. My father is the old American boy. You know, he's been here. His family's been here a few generations, but his roots are Italian as well. So I kind of span out. My mother's from Abruzzo. My father's family is from Rome, Naples, also Abruzzo. But I had the best of both worlds growing up. I had my super American side. I am American first. And then my super Italian side that, you know, maintain the culture there, but then fully embrace the culture here. And it was nice having both growing up. So
I'm going to ask you this.
Yeah.
From the immigrant side of the family, what's the best lesson that you've learned from them?
The best lesson I've learned from them? I look back at both my grandparents on my mother's side, but, you know, my grandfather, again, it's just that pursuit of the dream, you know, it's putting your family first and, you know, really working hard to achieve what you want. You know, nowadays they say work hard, work smart, all the above. Back then it was just survival, you know, and I feel like it creates a different level of human. You look at the world differently in a good way, you know, and more of a humbling way. And you really realize what's priority in life and what's necessary without all the extra flair and everything else. So,
yeah. Ironically, I think that immigrants in that sense almost have a leg up because of their risk factor. They're so much more willing to take the risk because they have to, right? They're already coming in with nothing. So the only way to go really is up. Whereas us Americans, we sit back and we're like, well, should I take out this loan to open this business? Right. You know, should I go, grab funding from other sources? Mm-hmm. Should I put money on a credit card? Should I do this to chase my dream? Should I do that? Right. We question, and I'm asking like the two of you too, because
CV's
family. That's
the spoiled side of it. Right? You know, that's where you kind of realize you have so many things to your advantage being here already. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're correct. It is the ultimate risk. I mean, think about it. What bigger risk it is than taking your entire family, moving across the world to an entirely different country where you don't know anyone, you don't speak the language, you don't have a credit card or this or that or access to loans. I mean, he came here with $700, which is actually a lot compared to some immigrants. Yeah. But still, what can you do with $700? But he did. And he fed a family at the same time. So,
and that was your grandfather?
My mother's father.
So what did your grandfather do for work when he first came over here?
Well, he moved here with the intention of starting a business with his brothers, construction, everything else.
I could have guessed that, Paul. That or waste management.
The most cliche thing. No, that's right. Can't say that on here. No, you can say it on here. It's all right. The intention of starting a construction company with his brothers. Life happens along the way. Curveballs get thrown at you. Things didn't work out as originally intended for them, but it still didn't change the end goal. You know, it's okay. Provide for my family, create a better life, achieve the American dream, do what I have to do to do that. You know, and for him, if that meant going nights without eating to make sure his family could eat, then that's what you have to do. You put your family first. You know, I might not be able to eat for 1, 2, 3, however many days, you know, not to the same amount of substance that, you know, his wife, his daughter, which is my mother, and, you know, his son, which is my uncle. But that's what you have to do. So
made me feel real soft right here, man. My stomach is growling already. Breakfast.
There's actually... This is a side note, I guess, but it's a humble reminder to myself. At the restaurant, top shelf of the bar, there's a tool bag. It's all canvas, has leather, metal trim on it. It's my grandfather's tool bag. And so when he came here, he was a mason, did like bricklaying, everything else, did a lot of work throughout Westchester. But that was his tool bag. And I keep it there as a reminder to myself of what he did, a humble reminder, you know, that, you know, you do have to put in the work. And, you know, like, granted, you know, sometimes you get ahead of yourself, you may, you know, you get a little cocky at times and everything, but that's my humble reminder that you can't get cocky. You can't get too comfortable. You know, it's a very volatile business. Business in general is volatile. But that bag, when I look at it, keeps me grounded. So that's why I keep it there as a symbol to myself.
See what you learn about people, man. Seriously.
Literally, built the American dream out of that bag.
So. He came with a tool bag, and we're over here with every
hammer, chisel.
That's it, man. What'd you study in school? You went to J.W.?
I did.
I saw that.
Yeah, I went to Johnson Wales in Providence, the Providence campus.
Yep.
And I studied hotel restaurant management.
Mm.
So very, they're very known for culinary. That's usually, you know, people's first guess. Oh, would you study culinary? I'm like, part of the curriculum.
But do you cook or you don't cook?
Can throw it down a little bit. I don't like to, you know, for myself, you know, for a few people, I love it. I love cooking. I cook every day for myself. At the restaurant,
there's better cooks.
Better cooks. That's I want to stay in business. I want to stay in business. Feeding, you know, a couple hundred people a night.
So before you went to college, you had the intent, because you mentioned it started at age four, which is, that's dope in itself. But then it obviously stuck with you, became a reality. You chose to go to a school where you're studying hotel and restaurant management. So you were very aware of what you wanted to do before you went into college, and you knew that you were going to open a restaurant.
Yeah.
Where did the concept of funding, like, how did you feel like you were going to be able to fund this? Because I feel like all of us, even in terms of a business, you have some level of idea of wanting to start something, right? Whether it's opening a restaurant, starting a business, doing something. But were you just so young that you didn't even really think about the funding aspect?
I mean, it always crosses your mind. I don't think you don't always know the severity of what you're doing, you know, given your age. Because I was 28 when we opened PAX. And you know, people thought I was crazy, you know, but the thing was, I've always wanted to do this. So I felt like I had at least some type of leg in. Started working when I was 12, 13 years old, you know, begged my parents. It wasn't hard for them to say yes, because they knew that I wanted it and they knew I wanted it for the right reasons. Started working 12, 13, knew I had to pay my dues, you know, went from, you know, small jobs here and there unrelated to the business. But then when I was 17, I was like, all right, you know, now I have to like really focus on this industry. So I got a job at the Castle on the Hudson in Tarrytown, which is right by my house. Worked there for 4 years, the first 2 years back and forth from school. After that, I went to a private club for 6 years. I was their food and beverage director. That was in Rockland County. Very, very private, very elite. The reason why I bring all this up is because these things in my mind were the necessary steps that I needed to learn everything about the business. And everything is never everything. It constantly evolves, fluctuates, this and that. But you get your foundation. You learn your foundation. You build off that. Money to like start your own. I mean, at the time for PAX, you know, we had invested, my partners and I had invested a little bit of our own money, but we took out a loan with the SBA. And it was very much a shot in the dark with the
SBA.
Small Business Administration.
Association.
Whatever. I should know that, right?
Thanks, SBA.
Yeah, thank you. But, well, there's a reason why I'm forgetting about it anyway, but that's besides the point. You know, so it's like, all right, you know, you take out $500,000 loan, $600,000, $700,000. Before you know it, you're like a mill in. And I'm like, all right, you're a mill in. I was like, what's a mill?
What's,
you know, but it's almost like ignorance is bliss in a sense. So, you know, the numbers are obviously very real and life is very real and this risk is very real. But I don't fear risk at all. Like there's zero fear to it, which is a blessing and a curse. Because sometimes I'm too, let's go, go, go. You know, which, you know, I've learned over time to kind of calm myself down. And again, recognize the severity of what you're doing. And not in a negative way, but it's just, this is real.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of people's lives, you know, their livelihoods, rather, you know, that are on the line because of it. But, yeah, I mean, the money side of it, I mean, that's one way to do it. You know, if you could do it personally, great. You find somebody to invest in you, great. If you could find a loan through a bank or some type of organization, great. Interest rates change, obviously.
Yeah, I think there needs to be that level of risk because and it's talked about a lot these days, but like people really like the idea of things, but they don't really want it. When you take out a $500, $750, $1 million loan on yourself, your drive, it better become through the roof. Because if not, I mean, you're toast. Most people wouldn't even take that.
Slave to the grind.
Right? Why the name Pax Romana? What does that mean? I think it means Roman peace from Google.
Yes, Latin.
Yes. Is that right? Let's go, Google.
Google is correct.
Let's go.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
No, Google is correct. My partner actually came up with the name. It is Latin for the Roman peace. It was a very prosperous time for the Roman Empire. The one common background we all shared was Roman. It inspired the menu, inspired the restaurant. The menu itself can pull from all areas of Italy, a few American Italian classics, a few we just wanted to have fun with. But Pax Romana itself is the epitome of Rome, the Roman Empire.
It's funny because I'm rewatching the Sopranos.
Okay.
And episode 6, season 1, the title is called Pax Soprana.
Really?
I don't
remember that. I love that show.
Ironically, I was watching it 2 nights ago and I'm like, oh, I'm getting with Paul this week. Like,
that's so funny.
It's funnier because Pax Romana, Pax Soprana.
it works. It's relevant.
It works. I know.
Yeah.
Owning a business of any kind is not easy.
No.
Right? What have been, I guess, some of the challenges? Well, before we go to challenges in general, talk to me about COVID. You said 8 years you've been open Pax. You moved once, right?
Moved once.
White Plains to White Plains, so right down the street.
Yeah, 5 doors down.
Right. So how did you navigate? Well, I guess take me back to the initial thought of when the pandemic hit and shit really hit the fan and shut down. Right. And then how did you navigate to stay in business through that?
To navigate this one, I'm going to have to go back to the original restaurant.
Talk to me.
Okay. So at the original restaurant, again, 5 doors down from where we are now, we had signed a lease on this. We're going to do long story short. Signed a lease on this space, started building this restaurant, built it for 6 months, opened it, operated for a year exactly to the day. Coincidence.
Really?
Yeah. Before we got the boot.
Why'd you get the boot?
So 8 months after we opened, we found out that our landlord at the time had given us a fraudulent lease on the space. He was getting foreclosed on. My original lawyer hadn't done a title search that would have easily found this out. Basically conned us into a lease, conned us out of 8 months of rent. And then literally a guy just walked in, introduced himself as the new owner of the building and asked us if we were interested in buying it. I thought it was clearly a joke.
Right.
I actually remember standing there, I looked up, I was like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? And you know, I was like, if this is a joke, it's like the most unfunny,
this
stupid
is
joke
not
I've
funny,
ever heard.
Right.
You know, what the fuck are you talking about?
This is the most unfunny joke.
Yeah. So we found out it was true, and then, you know, contacted our main lawyer, not the one who had done this, who should have done the search, and went into court, pretty much tried to fight it, see what our rights were, what our rights weren't. And then lo and behold, we had to leave. So we operated in and out of court and operated the restaurant for about 4 months before we left. So 8 months after we opened, we found out, last 4 months of being open simultaneously in court, ultimate Hitley had to leave. Wiped it out. It was clean as a whistle, you know. Didn't not gonna destroy anything and this and that, but there was nothing there. We took everything rightfully, you know. We had paid for it. That was the only thing that worked in our favor. Everything there we owned. but had to leave. And in my mind, I wasn't going to go out. A lot of emotions, clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
This is one of the lowest points in my life right now. Now I'm also $1 million in debt. So again, that number became very real.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, shit. It was like, what are we going to do? Depression, anxiety, this, that, and the other. However, my mind is not built that way. You know, I can feel depressed. I can feel anxious. But it's not who I am. So we left, went into court, started restaurant hunting again. And because I wasn't going to go out that way. If I fail, I fail. I'm good with that. You know, if I fail, I'll go do something else. What am I going to do? But I'm not going to go out because of a bad hand dealt to me. I'm also a man of accountability. So at the same time, even though I could sit here and say, you know, this guy screwed us, you know, he took something from us, and I have every right to say that because it is true. At the same time, it's also my fault. You know, I was young. I was, you know, excited. I didn't know at the time, like, oh, yeah, you should do a title. Yeah, I should know. You should do a title search on a building.
Well, you're a lawyer, though.
You've been a lawyer, yes. Yeah. But but these are things now, you know, you sign a lease here, or you look at this here, and it's like, well, did you do a title search? You know, did you do this?
That's a great lesson.
You do that? You do that? Right. Yeah. So these are all lessons. So I take that from it, you know, as the silver lining, interesting silver lining, but one nonetheless. But it does. It teaches you about life at that young age and, you know, building yourself. So we signed the lease in the new space. But throughout the interim of the two spaces, I'm in survival mode. You know, we had a great year when we were there. Set an awesome foundation, awesome reputation in the community and the surrounding. And, you know, kept everyone in the loop, really utilized social media and the power of it, kept everyone up to date on what had happened, what we're doing about it. Every time we met, signed the new lease, ins and outs of the construction, you really saw a different raw side of the business itself that you normally don't see.
Mm.
You know, you don't see nails going into walls and walls coming down and sheetrock going up and really seeing it come to life, which is actually a really cool part of the process to begin with. And people were very drawn to it. So then when we reopened, we were right off to the races. And literally line out the door, everything. Great. You know, cool. We're back. Fast forward now we get to COVID. Another wrench thrown right into the mix. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
Holy
it was like,
shit.
Just did this. Now, is this another way I'm going to lose this? So now you have all this emotion going through your mind. So we closed for about a week, 2 weeks, more or less. And all I did was clean. I scrubbed everything. Because now COVID's everywhere. It's fine. The water's dripping from the walls. It's coming from the ceiling, out of the lights. Like, what's going on? So that's what the world led you to believe. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, clean.
Yeah.
But I also do my best thinking when I clean. It's just very zen for me. So I'm like, all right. I was like, let's go back to the old playbook. I was like, I've survived some bullshit before. I was like, so let's survive this again. We're going to keep everybody in the loop. We're going to do this. We're going to highlight business. We're going to highlight our hours. We're going to highlight the surrounding to see how it goes. So it was almost like that first instance at the original restaurant taught me to survive in such a way that when this happened, I was just like, oh, let's go right back to my notes. You know, let's just do that all over again. Mm-hmm. You know, it worked the first time. Why wouldn't it work the second time? And we did. And so, you know, you had to think outside the box a little bit, you know, a little differently than the first time. But it's survival nonetheless, so the premise is there. So it started as, all right, what does the world need right now? Needs normality, right? In an abnormal world at the time. And I'm online, I'm looking, it's like, all right, there's no toilet paper, there's no soap, I don't even know, all these things that there's out of. And there was one common one that I saw, is like, oh, there's no pasta. I'm like, people really resonate with pasta. There's no pasta in the stores. We make our own pasta. I have unlimited access to flour. I have water. We make it with eggs. I have access to eggs. I have everything I need to give these people what they want. Let's see if it sticks. So at first it was just like, all right, pasta by the pound. And it started also because...
And you were selling this?
Yeah.
Like people would come pick it up?
Well, the thing is, we also had at the time, if I remember correctly, 220 pounds of pasta in the restaurant that we had just made. Then I'm like, shit, I can't let this food go to waste. This is sin.
Right.
So I put it on IG and I was just like, we have pasta. anyone wants it, selling it by the pound. I don't even care what you want to pay for it. So I don't want it to go to waste.
This is fire.
Yeah. And sold 220 pounds of pasta in less than 24 hours. And I was like, oh shit, we're really onto something with this pasta. So that's when I saw it, you know, circulating that they were out of. I'm like, stick with this. So my partners and I had a very nice system, you know, divide and conquer. But it's like, all right, one would come in, he would do the ordering and the production. I was in charge, you know, then he would leave. So we were, you know, we'd overlap a little bit. But
you wouldn't touch distancing. Each other, right?
No, no,
yeah,
no.
I was going to say no, social distancing. I'm going out the back. You come in the front.
Then I'd
spray,
come in.
Spray the Lysol while you come in.
Yeah, still the walls are still wet. Yeah. So it's crazy. But then I was in charge of basically marketing and the actual sales of it. And then my other partner at the time, he was really, really in on like the paperwork, like what we need to do, what the government's offering, this, that, and the other. So we all had a very, very relevant role to it, but it worked seamlessly. And it went from just pasta. Now we're doing pasta with a sauce. So now you had like a whole kit. Mm. You know, now you could come pick it up, you know, in and out, you paid already, you could bring it to the curb. You bring it home, you feed your family. A little bit of, again, of normality in an abnormal world. And just off IG alone, in a month and a half, it's about 5,000 plus pounds of pasta.
Wow.
Yeah. At around $8 a pound. Mm. Plus the sauce on top of it. So you basically each one had a, you know, not at first, but then eventually.
What were you doing in like mason jars?
No, just like plastic.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yep.
Containers. Okay. It was really the most cost effective, but easiest thing to get from our suppliers because not everything was available, but it worked. Container of pasta, container of sauce. Bring it home, feed your family, you feel normal, it's a normal dinner for a little bit. Anything you could do. Sold sauce kits, then started selling other things with it. Then we developed it into a campaign that I coined the Penne for Your Thoughts campaign. Mm. And really made it a community thing where, you know, yeah, you can buy food for yourself, feed your family, everything else. But now so many people wanted to help first responders, everyone on the front line of everything, on the medical side of it, whatever it was, or whomever you wanted to send it to, just mm-hmm. for argument's sake. But we allowed people who didn't have options to provide for these other people outside of them and gave them a way to do it. So you wanted to feed first responders, frontline workers, you can't do it yourself. But you know what? You can support a small business who will make it for you, package it, deliver it, and say, so-and-so family, so-and-so business, whatever it was, this is from them, this is for you, this is, they see you, they acknowledge what you're doing, and they just want to, this is just a little thank you. Mm. And that really took off too. So now you're able to support small business at the same time, feed frontline workers, I can pay my bills within reason, and it's just a circle of life at the time that really worked for everybody. And then it evolved into so many different things, but kept my lights on, kept my bills paid. So,
dude,
it was interesting at the time. But it all came from what I learned from the original restaurant and survival. It's just utilizing social media, surviving, thinking outside of the box, keeping everybody in the loop, giving everybody a path to something normal. So
the global pandemic became a... Yeah. A pasta pandemic out here.
That's fire,
bro. That's so.
Yeah.
When you tell that story, how does that make you feel though? Because like when I'm hearing it,
it's good.
I think we're similar in a sense of like, you know, you do something really good or you get acknowledgement for something, but you're already like on to the next one and thinking about the next one.
You have to be.
But it's tough though because you don't get to enjoy or reap the rewards of mm-hmm. what it is that you did. What you did in that story is actually incredible. I'm not just pumping you just to say that.
I appreciate that.
That's a dope thought right there. Like, I mean, just the whole, you provided memories for families, you mm-hmm. know, like that whole thought right there. And then even with the first responders, that's... Kudos to you, my brother.
Thank you. It was definitely an interesting time. You know, it's almost a little strange kind of thinking back. Like, I remember it all, but, like, you forget about certain things. If I go through my pictures and some videos that we took at the time, like, wow, I forgot about this. It's amazing what your mind does in the middle of it. So, yes, it can adapt and change, and thankfully it did, and it worked in our favor. But the mind is very funny as a defense mechanism. It tends to block out. I don't want to say trauma, that sounds a little dramatic, but anything negative in your life, it almost forces itself to forget. And I actually have to reference pictures and videos to like really, really remember certain angles of it. But yeah, definitely a very interesting time in life.
Do you think what you just said, that statement of like the mind blocks out certain traumatic moments, you think you have to build your mind to become that? Or do you think that's for everybody?
No, I think that's for everybody.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I think I disagree because people that I know, a lot of people that overthink and then they get crippled and paralyzed by the by the negative thought even, right? And they can't take the action. Whereas you're kind of saying the opposite, that your brain blocks it. And I think that's a you thing. And I think my brain does that well, but it, it's also taken time and experience to kind of get there.
It could be. It could be a combination of both. Maybe trauma, I guess, in a different sense than what you're saying, because yeah, your mind will definitely block out certain things. If you're looking at it from the angle of more of like controlling emotion, then yes, absolutely. That is something you have to learn.
Right, right.
And teach. Not everybody has that. And that was a big thing for me throughout the years too, in terms of my mind and the overthinking is really the control of it. And listen, this is a lifelong effort. You know, you're never going to be a master of your emotion.
Yep.
But if you can learn to control it, that will absolutely make or break anything you do in your life, is managing your emotion. That's not really what I meant when, sorry, that was probably my own, I misspoke in the sense of trauma and your mind blocking things out. But
no, it makes sense now. I get it.
Yeah, but 100%. You're 100% correct with your mind and overthinking and emotion. Yeah, that'll single-handedly make or break you as a business person, being able to control emotion. You know, and that's something that I had to learn over the years. And again, it's going to be a lifelong effort. But I think I have a pretty good handle of it, because there's different ways to put things into perspective that even in the moment, if you're overwhelmed, there are things you can do to like, all right, let me just take a step back, take a breath for a second. Let me put this into a rational perspective. And then let me respond, because that's the biggest thing, is I want to be able to respond. I don't want to react. I want to be able to respond. And if you can learn to respond instead of react, you're good. You can do whatever you want.
So I'm learning so much about you, man. And it makes sense from the family background to the business challenges that you've been able to overcome. But there's got to be more to this, in sense of, because you're so in tune with your own emotional intelligence and just you as a man, right? I'm sitting across from you and I can sense the authentic self of, what am I looking for? The authenticity, I guess, of your being, right? And you're very collected and you're calm and you're cool, but you also have a extreme confidence about you, which is great to see.
Appreciate that, thank you.
Enough compliments for you, Paul.
But gonna take one notch off this snap real quick.
You know what I'm saying? But I'm always interested, because my point here is that you have to put in work to get here.
Yes.
What do your habits and routines look like, I guess, outside of the family dynamic and the business world, that make you who you are today? You have to be into personal professional development.
100%. Okay. My God, beyond belief. And the older I get, the more I realize how crucial it is, like absolutely crucial. You know, if I could go back to my, and listen, I loved my younger self. I loved what I did, made a lot of mistakes, and I loved all my mistakes. I made a lot of accomplishments, loved them. But I wish that I could have told my younger self that personal development side. I have a very strict morning routine now.
What is it?
I have a whole list. That's the other thing, is that I have a list for everything in my life. Like, it's a checklist.
I wish I knew this. That would have been his nickname. Paulie the List.
Paulie the List. Oh, forget it. We get that from my mother. Okay. For sure. But your life is a list. Me. Yeah. So it's here. I'll reference it right now. We'll skip some of them that aren't as
the 44-step process in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, but it's nothing.
Right.
It's nothing stuff. Extravagant.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, but it sets such a nice tone for the day. It's the foundation of the day. It's the first thing you do when you wake up. If you do that, everything else becomes so much more manageable. You know, it's like I wake up, I drink no tap water ever. We don't do tap water. Spring water only. Don't drink it.
You should do hydrated water.
I'm gonna look into it.
Hydrogenated.
If it's something I can improve on myself, I never feel like I'm too good. If there's something better, I want to know what it is.
So we're gonna go on a tangent real quick before you go to your list.
I love it.
So when it comes to water, unfortunately, I grew up in Mount Vernon, New York. You know, sink drink and the hose drink. Very normal. I still consume sink drink, unfortunately, but I started studying Gary Brecka, right? Who's the 10X, like you have Grant Cardone with his 10X in real estate. Brecka bought into the 10X, but he does it in health. Brecka became the doctor, the personal doctor of Dana White, and changed his life in like a 10-month period. Mm-hmm. And he was giving out all of these free, like cheap tools to people. And basically what he said about water, he said it doesn't matter. Spring water is like number three on the list. Number one is hydrogenated water. So you can go on Amazon and you can actually buy this bottle and it spins around and it basically hydrates the water. And I don't, I guess it's just hydrogen going into the water would be my guess.
Right.
I don't know the exact science behind it, but the actual term that you're looking for is hydrogenated water. But you can turn your sink drink into hydrogenated water and it's a bottle that you buy. You got to look into it. Fire.
I wish you didn't tell me this right now because while we're mid combo, I'm going to start looking it up. Like,
wait, what's number two though?
Reverse osmosis.
Yes, it is. Reverse osmosis system.
Yes.
And you got to add a little salt to it to remineralize. But
I forget what it was. You have spring water. What are the other ones? Oh, the pH waters. You know the pH waters?
Oh, yeah.
So all of these different things that they sell, he's like, they're good. But really, if you want to change your life when it comes to water, got to go hydrogenated water. I do, unfortunately, because my bottle didn't exactly come yet. So I just do my Brita, but my fridge. That's filtered. And I do a half a teaspoon of salt with a half a lemon.
Okay. Salt is crucial.
Yes. Oh, it's everything.
These all sound like basic things, but it is absolutely a game changer. The little things you can do, unbelievably cost effective. Won't cost you anything more than anything else. But
I took you off track. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. It's all relevant to the combo. But yeah, I mean, I have my spring water, salt-based electrolytes, very first thing. It's all about the salt.
What brand?
I use Santa Cruz Medicinals.
Okay.
Yeah, great, great brand. Mm-hmm. Love everything about them. I use quite a few of their supplements. But it's the very first thing I do. And then I take my creatine, also Santa Cruz Medicinals.
How many grams?
What is it, five?
Like just one teaspoon, one scoop?
Yeah, one scoop into the water.
A little bit more.
I like doing it on an empty stomach, though. Everyone's a little bigger than me. You're good. But I like taking it on an empty stomach. Don't come at me in the comments. You can take it whenever you want. This is what works for me. I was like, and I love it. So I'm going to stick with it. But that's the first thing I do. And I like their products also because it's very clean.
Mm-hmm.
It's creatine monohydrate. The only ingredient in it is creatine monohydrate.
Yep.
I don't want sugar. I don't want taste like fucking Skittles.
No caffeine.
And everything. All this other shit. Like, I just want straight up what it is. No additives, no fillers, no anything. No, nothing artificial.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go right to my emails, check my junk emails, check business IG. There's a few other businesses that I'm involved in. So I'll check the status of them along the way. I have apps that can basically break everything down. I do that very first thing in the morning. Then I go into a very, like, a nice 15-minute stretching routine, which was huge, adding that as part of my life.
You can touch your toes?
I can.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive, bro.
Yeah, I mean, it took a little while, but I got to it. But, you know, I guess that my 20s, I didn't have to think about that as much. But now I'm 37, so shoulder here, the knee there, back, sciatica's acting up.
It's interesting, though, to think that you go into your emails first and then you're able to basically circle back and then get into a, like, mindful stretching routine. I would think it would have to be, like, the opposite.
You know, because there's other things you do in the morning that's good for email time, you know, another time. So, without saying it out loud.
Gotcha.
You know, and and then you go into the stretch, but then that kind of just, it recalms me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then what is after that stretch, then I go right into eating, very all protein, no carbs breakfast. It's usually 3-4 eggs, half a cup of Greek yogurt, and some type of animal-based protein.
Mm.
Always. Mm. Every day, it's the same exact thing.
On top of the eggs.
Yeah, on top. However,
No. I'm saying not physically on top, but so you're already doing.
Oh yes, yes.
Right, because I do 5 eggs. I used to just do a quick 6, and I hope
the pasteurized. Tell me the pasteurized.
They are. All right, good. Brown eggs only. And what's even crazier is in the spring, summer, fall months, my neighbor has chickens.
Oh,
it's fire,
my
bro.
Dream.
So this thing just lays eggs, and I just have eggs. Fresh eggs delivered to my house. It's unbelievable.
Ultimate.
So I do 5 eggs. I used to just do hard boiled, but this has been something that I've been doing since I was like 13 years old. Mm. My brother used to make fun of me because I would walk around with hard boiled eggs in my pocket in a Ziploc.
I love it.
Because I would caddy, and I was
actually,
so obsessed.
Since you mentioned,
I was so obsessed with trying to get my protein needs in for the day.
100%.
That I would, every hole I would do, there's 18 holes, right? On the golf course. I would do 10 push-ups and eat an
love
egg,
that.
Bro. It was crazy. But now I actually scramble the eggs, which is great. It tastes so much better with tomato and avocado.
More palatable for sure. Nice.
And my protein.
All the healthy fats.
Yeah.
Got to get that avocado, too.
It's a huge game changer, I think, for people just in general, because we're so, in America, we're taught the wrong thing. You're not supposed to be eating carbs in the morning. You're really not supposed to be eating carbs besides Paulie's pasta.
Agreed.
That's the only carb you should
eat. Which is glyphosate free, for the record, right? As well.
Go ahead. Keep talking to me. I like this.
Let's see. I take my vitamin D supplement, also Santa Cruz Medicinals.
Wait, bro. So you
this is not even a paid promo either. I would hit him up and be like, listen, bro, I'm fucking plugging you right now. You got to send me something.
But you have to do it. What, you have to take the vitamin D after you stretch?
After I eat.
Bro, you're even more like,
stretch,
I thought
eat,
I'm crazy.
Stretch, eat, vitamin D.
Stretch, eat, vitamin D. There you go. It's a tagline.
Then, I finish washing up and everything because I brush my teeth, everything else after I eat.
That's a good plug for me.
Yeah.
Stretch, eat, vitamin D. Get it, Dave?
Ah, it works.
Thank you.
Pack my gym bag and everything. And then, depending on what's going on that day, I'll usually go to the restaurant first because I want to plan my week depending on the day of the week. But, do we have private events this week? Am I printing, menus for those private events? Because usually the private events, that's a particular menu. You made your choices ready. I print them out. I submit them to the kitchen. I go through invoicing, work on any other paperwork. If there are emails that I have to acknowledge, if it's business related, then I do that first. It's on my way to the gym anyway, so it's nice. One straight line.
Yep. Where's your gym?
I go to Lifetime in Harrison. Mm. Love. Spoiled me though, ruined my life.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's an expensive gym, but it's a beautiful gym. And then in the summertime, it's like a resort.
It is. It's really a. It's like an athletic country club.
It is.
It definitely is. It's a resort with a gym. It's not even a gym. But I'm a big sauna guy too, and where I used to go for sauna, it actually cost me more going very minimal per month, doing the saunas once a week. Mm-hmm. Because I'd have to go to the correct ones, I gotta go to Brooklyn and here and there, wherever else, with the cold plunges to go with them. That would cost, going once a week would cost me more, and then I have to drive to Brooklyn.
A month right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To get a day pass, and they're like, really, mm-hmm. sauna cold, everything else.
So they have that at Lifetime, too?
They don't have a cold plunge yet.
Yeah, they
but
should.
I think they're working on it, but
just
the sauna's
a lot. Yeah, seriously. Time, bro.
Turn that shower on super cold for a little while. But, now I can it's a one-stop shop. Mm-hmm. Just the sauna alone, it cost me the same amount. Now I have the gym, I have every other class, I have every other amenity. I love it there.
You do classes there too?
Not on a regular basis. I'm trying to find ones I really
Pilates
like.
Pilates Paul is a thing, I hear.
If one more person tells me Pilates.
Oh no, I don't know, I've never done it. Do I look like a Pilates dude to
That's
you?
What I said, and everyone's like, you would love it. It is an absolute game changer. I see these machines that, first off, they look like either torture devices.
That's what
or this is like some 50 Shades.
Yeah.
Like kind of like sex device. I'm like, what is going on in this little room?
And then typically the room is filled with, women. Right. So
you get me in trouble.
It's kind of distracting. Right. Like, so you're over here like, so what? I mean, it's a predominantly stretching class, right?
Right. That's what it is. But these people are in unbelievable shape. And they said it will.
Imagine we're doing we're over
you.
Here like dummies lifting it's all crazy. Day long. But really, all we have to do is go into this.
Whoever thought of these, but whoever thought of these contraptions, like it's impossible to explain.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's springs and wires and ropes and it's like a ladder and what the fuck is it? But it is unbelievable what it can do. From what I've read about it, I do want to learn more about it because even just for the knowledge, but people absolutely swear by it. So I got to give it a shot.
Yeah, yeah. No, I like that.
Just give it a chance.
Anything else on that, on the list? Is that
well, then I build my list, you know? So then I usually do that the night before. Like everything I do, I know I need to do the next day.
You make a list every day?
Every single
day. Of the same thing that you're going to do?
Well, those things, the morning routine.
They stay the same.
They stay the same.
But do you copy and paste it onto a new list?
No, that was just okay. The top of the list.
Okay.
And right. I just uncheck it.
Okay.
To get ready for the next day.
Oh, you're sick, bro.
But then everything else it's in a certain order. The order can change, obviously, as life happens. But I have a general idea, like, what's going to be the most time effective, like, really going to manage my time well, because I'm obsessed with time management. What makes the most sense right now? Can that change? Yes. Is it okay if it changes? Yes, obviously it's okay if it changes. But doing this, and this in this order will give me, in my mind right now, the best management of time,
right,
considering. And that changes every single day. I mean, right now I probably have, just today alone, I don't know, close to 36 things throughout the rest of the day. But that's the other thing. Before I really did list like this thoroughly, that's when you get overwhelmed unnecessarily. You know, you're trying to remember, I got to do this. I write down the stupidest things, you know, just to make it part of the list, because when I do,
it's a release almost.
Yes, but I could do 1,000 things in a day effectively by writing it down and doing this format rather than trying to remember. And then I'm going to do 100 things maybe in a mediocre fashion. So why would I do 100 things mediocrely, if that's a real word? I think it's a real word. Yeah. Mediocrely, right?
I bought in.
Yeah. Sounded correct.
I'm sold.
Or I can be more organized, which is just good anyway, and do 1,000 things really well.
Right.
You know, so that's really the premise behind the list. I swear by it. We love the list.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to learn about you, man. I like it. We have our ACE Summit coming up. Action Cultivates Excellence. It's a men's personal and professional development summit. It's a 3-day experience, February 16th to 18th, New Paltz, New York, and we're inviting 25 men who are looking to level up their lives. We'll be doing guided cold plunges, leadership training, breath work, group workouts, expert-led workshops, and a keynote from the Yankee legend, Joe Girardi. There's something to be said about surrounding yourself with 25 like-minded men. This is about building a community, fellowship, and a brotherhood. So whether you're looking to grow in business, your fitness, your relationships, or simply develop new lifestyle habits, this retreat is for you. It doesn't matter if you've made mistakes in the past, or you haven't been able to commit, or you're telling yourself you're not worthy. Let me tell you this. This is a new year. 2024, you are worthy. You're supposed to be here. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself. We all have a thought of what being a man in today's society is. And yes, it's a strong provider and a protector. But real strength lies in vulnerability. We're looking to bridge the gap between masculinity and vulnerability and bring out the absolute best in each and every one of you. AceSanctuary.com for tickets. We will see you there. What's the hardest part about establishing, and this is for, you know, me and just in business, I'm obsessed with this stuff, like establishing a positive culture, a restaurant, you're employing tons of people who have families of their own. So to people, to the consumer, we're just going to the restaurant, we're eating, right? But there's a business behind this. And I'm a firm believer that whatever business you're in or you're in charge of, there needs to be, for that business to be successful, there needs to be established, you know, procedures, processes, protocols.
Right.
What's the hardest part of creating that positive culture in a restaurant business? Or is it not hard? I don't know.
It's circumstantial. Are there hard moments? Yes, because we're all human. We all have our moments, and there's always a cliche, oh, leave your problems at the door. Like, yeah, you can leave it at the door, but
they're listen, coming in.
they're coming in one way or another. Right. You know, it's just depends on what's going on. You can't just blanket statement that.
Do you, and, so and you also, do you meet with your staff frequently, like to create this culture? Because I've been a customer at your establishment, is what I'm saying. And everybody is super friendly. Everybody's super welcoming. People. I love the concept of being able to see the actual kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, myself.
Love transparency.
Right. And everybody was just so friendly. So I know that there's a positive culture. That's why I'm asking the
question. Thank you. That's one of my favorite compliments, because they are number one to me, over the customer, over everything, are the people that work with us. We're very blessed, fortunate, especially in a very difficult time for the industry as a whole, with employment. People are coming and going with the wind. We fortunately have had the same people since we opened.
Wow.
You know, some of them came back after the transition from the original restaurant to this one. Some of them have been with me all 8+ years now. Some of them are new to this restaurant, but so we've been at this one over 5.5 now. But everyone there has been with us since we opened. And if there is a new face, it's because I needed more people. Mm-hmm. I've never really replaced somebody because somebody left. And if somebody did leave, it was because they wanted to pursue their own career. Right. And we love that.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I'm never going to say, no, you can't pursue your lifelong goals because you got a bartend here, a wait here, a bus here. No, we support good people and what they want to do. But the ones who are with us, they have really been with us since the beginning. And I think one of the reasons is because it's not such a hostile workplace. Like, you watch shows like Hell's Kitchen or things like that. Like,
looks crazy.
Don't get me wrong. Like, it can exist. Like, that's very military style training. That's how I was taught. Mm-hmm. But again, that's very dramatic. You know, it's for ratings and everything else. It's not the overall what the restaurant industry is. But it also comes down to you as a leader, you know, as an owner, as a manager, whomever. It's simple. It's setting an example. You have to be willing to do the same thing for your people that you expect from them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, throughout the years, every time I did do an interview, even though it's been a while since I've done one, it's always the same. It's always the same thing. You know, I want to know who you are as a person, what you like to do. I personally prefer people who have experience in the business. But if you don't, you know, and if you're a good person, I can make that work. Mm-hmm. You know, we could teach you some things. But I always say the same thing. Nobody here is too good to do anything. I don't care who you are. You know, I have a certain standard that I want, and I expect it to be done a certain way, and you will do it that way. But if you're running around, you're taking care of tables, and this is the example I always use. If you spill something on the floor, something is spilt on the floor, I don't expect you to drop everything and take care of it. If I'm not doing anything at that given point in time, you can come over and say, hey, Paul, I'm taking care of these tables right now. I'm running around. There's a spill on the floor. I'm going to go grab a mop, and I'm going to mop the floor. I don't care how that comes across to anybody. It's like, oh, why is the owner mopping the floor? Because there's a spill.
Because I have that toolbox up in the top right.
Yeah, exactly correct. Exactly right. That toolbox is there as that humble reminder, but why are you mopping? Because there's a spill. Right. What do you mean, why am I mopping? Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you need to do. You know, and I feel like when you set that example for them, that you're willing to do everything instead of just being, no, you know, go do this. You're like a dictator. You know, you're not gonna retain anything.
Yeah.
You're not gonna retain your people. It's just they're gonna go the second the dollar is better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when you create a good culture, and the money's good at the same time, because listen, today's day and age, money matters. You know, people are pinching pennies. You know, it's difficult. If the money's right and you create a good culture, you're solid for a long time. Something really, really has to go wrong, mm-hmm. you know, for there to be a mutiny or for people to start bailing on you.
Right.
So, but you got to treat them like humans at the same time, because that's what they are. Mm-hmm. That's how I'd want to be treated.
Absolutely.
So it's worked in our favor.
No, and the retention component I think is huge. That's very
crazy.
That's very telling right there. So for those who don't know, Pax Romana, like we said, is in White Plains, which is heavily dominated by a lot of bars, restaurants. It's a great area. So I can see the competition.
One or two bars.
See the competition being, you know, crazy. So being able to retain those employees is great.
Yeah.
This is the hardest question that I ever get asked. It's a simple one, but it's tough.
Okay.
And I think because as a society, we don't like promoting our strengths. I do this even interviews with, you know, potential employment candidates.
Right.
I do this with kids. I do it with my daughter. What do you do extremely well as a leader? And it could be for business, right? Because I really want to gear this towards, you know, the young entrepreneur, somebody who's starting a business, somebody who's seeking personal professional development.
Right.
But you're an established dude now, right? And obviously we can both get better in our industries. There's never a point in time where I think we're just going to sit back and be like, you know, I've done it. I've made it.
Yeah.
But what at this time do you do extremely well in business and as a leader?
That is a hard question. You know, I don't like.
I know.
If other people gas me, that's one thing. Gassing myself is weird.
But it's not really gassing, though. No, it's a fact. You know what I mean?
Let me think about this one.
And I can tell you, I can even start on.
Fix my hat at the same time.
I can even start on me. I'll give you some time to think. So for me, especially when it comes to, so I'm in local government, as you know.
Yeah.
But I have a team of 25 full-time employees. Mm-hmm. I think that they would all say that I do a good job of being available to them when they need me most, right? So regardless of what's going on, I make the time and I put the energy in when they need me. There might be times that they're at my office and I ask, do you really need me? And even somebody like CV, you know, he might be like, no, I'm good. Because I might be really busy in that moment. But when my employees need me, I'm there.
Right.
My consistency with them is, I believe, top notch. Because we set meetings together. Mm-hmm. We don't miss those meetings. I can keep going if you need more time to think. If you want me to pump myself. But are you ready?
Yeah. Rock with it. I love it too.
Yeah. No. But I wanted to give you context of kind of what I'm thinking.
I think it kind of goes back to something I touched on before, and I don't think I'm a master at it. I just think that because I put in a conscientious effort daily to improve it, again, as the controlling your emotion. You know, as a leader, people do have the expectation that, like, all right, if you're leading me, I need you to have your shit together. Mm. You know, and again, that doesn't mean you lack emotion, but it's being able to put things into a perspective and handling adverse situations. And I think that overall, I think, again, without sounding cocky, it's weird saying
that.
No,
it's not cocky, bro. It's,
but I think I am good at handling situations, negative situations. And because it's always the first thing that I think, whenever something arises, the first thing I always think is like, is this a real life problem? Is this really a real issue? Most of the time, it's not. Mm-hmm. And when you put, even if you ask somebody that question, I'm like, is this a real life issue? Is this really something that is taking value from your life? You know, put it into perspective for a second. Take a step back, take a breath, tell me what you're feeling. But is this really that severe as you think it is in the moment? Most of the time, it's not. Mm-hmm. And then you immediately see it. You see their shoulders kind of drop. They, you know, their face changes, they become a little more relaxed. And like, I guess it's really not. Like, yeah, it's really not an issue. Sometimes it is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it really is an issue. Okay, if this really is an issue, what do you want to do to fix this? I want to hear you out. I want to hear what you think. And then we're going to evaluate it and then put it into another perspective.
And make a list. And then we're going to check off the action that gets taken here.
Exactly. But, you know, it's taking proper steps to alleviating adverse situations and creating a remedy for it.
I love that.
Yeah, and that comes with time. Mm-hmm. You know, so I guess it's possible to have that, but that's really a lot of life trial and tribulation.
To learn skill
getting
too.
Broken down and building yourself back up and crying here and then wiping your tears off, going back out. Like, it really is from experience over and over and over and over again that kind of builds you that way. Mm. But to be self-aware enough too.
Yep.
You know, so I think that maybe I'll throw that in there.
Yeah, man.
That's a good one.
And also, just as a society, I swear, man, we're very quick, like, you know, to talk about our weaknesses and, like, you know, what we need to improve on. And it's hard. It's difficult to almost promote and pump yourself. I had actually put up a story that got a lot of traction, like an Instagram story. So the first thing that I put up was basically a clip of like a camera that was taking a whole bunch of pictures of me for an article that's coming out, right?
Cool.
And I promoted it and I said, be on the lookout for, you know, an article on what I do professionally, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of DMs. Half of them were, you know, like, keep going, bro. Like, love what you're doing. It was good stuff. But more than I would have liked were like, wow, you really love yourself. You know, you're... No one loves themselves more than Dave Regina was a comment that I got that stuck with
you
me.
You should love yourself.
Right, right. Which, yes, I do. But also, I then replied with a story. And I was like, if you don't promote yourself, nobody's going to do this for you. So even though that it's a little bit uncomfortable, and yes, I do. Listen, I think I'm a handsome guy, right? Like, I think I'm a good guy. No, I'm serious. Like, I'm being honest with you. I'm a confident dude. Good. But it's still uncomfortable to post things that are promoting yourself.
Yes.
And I'm telling you that even as a confident guy, it's still uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I'm putting myself out there with the intention of like, yeah, promoting myself and this is something good. But like, if you don't do that yourself or for your business, nobody's going to do that for you.
No.
Then that story actually got a lot of, you know, positive traction. And even a couple of you haters out there, you trolls. I even got two apologies.
Endless.
Yo, it's unbelievable. Endless. But if you're not hate, if I guess if they're not hating on you, you're not doing anything right, right?
Yeah, you're not wrong.
But my point is, I have a 3.5-year-old daughter, like I told you, Callie, and I ask her every night, what do you love about yourself? Mm. And that list is getting long, baby. And good. I'm loving it.
Good.
I'm loving it. And now it's going to be on me as a parent and a father to obviously manage the humility.
Oof, I couldn't even imagine.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's coming.
That's the hardest job in life.
Oh, bro. You want kids?
I do, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. I do.
It's tough.
Ideally, maybe two sons and a girl.
Oof, wow.
I used to always be like, no, I don't want a girl. I was like, because I know there's a million of me in my 20s running around. But then I was, as I get older, I was like, nah, a little girl would be nice.
Yeah, no, it's the best, man. It really is.
Yeah.
So I put up a poll on, well, not a poll. I was asking for questions for you specifically, and a couple came in. What do you do for fun?
For fun?
Eat pasta.
Eat pasta, drink wine. Nah. I mean, yeah, I do love those things. I mean, it kind of falls in the same industry, but love new restaurants, love trying new things. I'm not opposed to trying anything new in terms of cuisine and everything else. I like to explore the palate.
Yep.
And, you know, see what's out there, experience different cultures, everything else. When I can, I mean, it became farther and fewer in between, but I mean, I do love to travel as best I can. Past few years, I mean, I just went on my first vacation this past August, first time in like 6-7 years.
Wow. Just because of business?
Yeah. You know,
but now is that
life,
real
COVID,
or is that you just basically saying I can't leave my business?
Both.
Okay.
Both. You know, there were times I cannot leave, you know, especially during like COVID and everything else. It was just too much. But then where are you traveling anyway? I want to go and travel somewhere where I can experience and not with restrictions and guidelines and this and that.
Right.
So now it's a little bit more, it's open. But yeah, then there's also the side of my own mind, you know, letting go a little bit, which is also very important. It's something I learned is always like, no, work. You have to be there 24/7 and everything. And you do have to be but you have to be available 24/7, but you really, really have to learn the balance of it, because when you do detach a little bit and you enjoy yourself and you just take a breath, you come back so much more productive and clear-minded and this. And then you, again, it's all the perspective. You put things into perspective so much better. You know, I wish I had detached a little bit more. Did it hurt me? No. Could it have helped me? Yeah, maybe it could have helped me a little bit more, but that's one thing I wish I had done more of. Mm. But yeah, for fun, traveling, you know, I don't know. I'm always up for a new adventure. I like new things. You know, I like spontaneous things. It doesn't even have to be within my normal comfort zone. Oh, hey, you want to go do this? Yeah, let's go do it. Because I'm a student of life.
Yep.
You know, I want to learn everything about life. I want to experience different angles. I want things that, you know, things that I'm comfortable with, but I want things that make me uncomfortable too, you know, and find out who I am as a human being, you know, and just learn. So those are things I like for fun.
I like that. Our girl Linda Tomas, she said, what's your favorite pasta dish?
My favorite pasta dish? I mean, I'm a garlic and oil guy. So like the one on our menu, cavatelli, broccoli rabe, sausage. But my favorite pasta of all time, spaghetti, but aglio e olio, just garlic and oil. But I like it with anchovy. I know.
Lost me the anchovy.
So when I eat that, I'm going immediately home and I'm not seeing anybody. Your breath is kicking.
Yeah.
Anchovy just crushed you. It is so delicious, though. It's such a simple dish and I absolutely love it. But again, I'm going, nobody's seeing me for like two days after that.
So I always think that brought a fond memory back to me. So we would always go down to Little Italy and my dad loved stopping in at Angelo's.
Okay.
Right down to the restaurant in Little Italy. And he would always, at the end of the night, go get a to-go of just spaghetti, garlic, and oil.
Love it.
Specifically from Angelo's.
Good. It's the simplest thing. It's so good.
That was very cool.
Love that.
If you could have any celebrity sit down in your restaurant, who would it be and why?
I don't know. That's a hard one, too.
If I had a restaurant, it would be Jennifer Lopez. That's just... It's just me, though.
Jennifer Lopez, yeah.
And
I mean,
why?
I can see why.
Because she's the GOAT.
Holds great conversation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's very intelligent. I like sitting down with intelligent people. Yes.
I don't know. I don't want this to sound like, oh, you're too cool for school type thing, but I'm not really big on the celebrity. Like, even if a celebrity came in.
Well, a couple, I'm sure, have been there.
They have, yes. Yeah. But
I mean, I've been there. I was there last week, bro.
truth. But if one does come in, you got to wait like everybody else.
Of course.
Shit. You know, we got to wait. You're not getting bumped up. You don't get privilege.
Yep.
You know, it's just, okay, when your table is ready, I'll bring you in. And if the table happens to be ready, you know.
Yeah, I don't know, though. So, like, I mean, again.
That's a hard one.
So I hear what you're saying. But, like, I would love, I mean, he's dead now, but James Gandolfini would have been amazing.
But see, these are good ones, too. Yeah.
He would have been amazing. Like, to have him in your restaurant after you watch The Sopranos and you see, like, his enjoyment for eating and forget the whole mob life. Like, that in itself is a different conversation. But he was so passionate about everything he was eating. Like, I would have loved to have him in a restaurant.
Yeah, things like that are cool.
Yeah,
you know, I like
hell yeah.
Things like that.
So you're not choosing anybody? You got anybody?
I don't know.
Really?
I never really thought
about
it.
One celebrity. You're not supposed to think about it. You're supposed to just think about it now. Who would yours be, CB, to have a meal with? No?
I've met so many along the way, though, especially before I opened PAX and I was at the private club.
Yeah.
Top of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not really supposed to mention certain names, but, you know.
It's all right. We won't tell anybody.
I mean, I'm wearing one of their sneakers right now, so.
Oh.
Yeah, he was a member there, too.
Wow.
People like that, you know, and there were all walks of life there, though, not just the celebrity, the athlete, everything else.
We won't say who it is, but on his sneaker, there's a man holding a basketball with his legs open. No, it could be Shaq. You don't know. Doesn't Shaq have the sneaker too with the thing?
It is not Shaq.
It was still pretty cool. Shaq is a dope one too.
But you know, it's I don't want to say become numb to it because it is. It's cool. You know, it's interesting seeing these people in like the different part of life because you know you just have your idea of how they live.
Mm-hmm.
And normal people.
Yeah, of course.
Normal people.
All right, bad question. Don't ask Alvin again. this one was cool. I want to, I guess, hear from you because I'd be interested in this answer too.
Okay.
What's one goal Paulie wants to achieve in 2024?
2024? I mean, I am working on another project right now and really...
Yeah, you said this. Okay, let's wind this back. So I'm texting back and forth with him.
Paperwork.
I'm texting back and forth with Paul, and he's like, "Yo, I just left a board meeting of something that I'm doing in business," and I immediately want to be like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
So what are these other businesses?
You know, you're another little project working on. It's within the industry, but it's like
opening a restaurant.
Yeah, but it's not like full service like the way this is. You know, more coffee, dessert. You know, stuff like that. Fun little shot.
Okay.
You know, just for argument's sake, we got a great opportunity.
So when is that launching?
If I don't have to get any more board meetings and get approvals, I mean, I should have started 3 months ago, but that's the other thing with business. It's take your timeline, multiply it by three.
Wow.
That's what it's going to be. But it's like, oh, you got to sit in front of this board. They got to approve this. And then do they vote on it right away? No, they vote on it next month. And you can't start anything until they vote on it next month.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're just waiting another month for a vote. But that's the nature of the beast.
Yeah. So the goal is to launch that?
Yeah. My goal 2023, I had a bunch, but my goal was two new businesses. And I achieved that. So now 2024 is really expanding on this business, maintaining packs, and then we'll see. See Very if any cool. Opportunities tend to present themselves when you least expect it.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I found that the best things I've found is when I'm not, not that when you're not looking, you have to be aggressive, you have to look. Sometimes if you just chill, it comes and finds you.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
No.
But it works.
But that's because you've also put in time to get to where you're at, that opportunities are seeking you now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
Like, I don't want the young entrepreneur who hasn't done shit to hear that and be like, yeah, I'm just going to wait.
No.
You have to be impatiently patient.
Right. You have to be aggressive. You have to put yourself out there. You have to learn. You have to absorb everything. And the more you do that, you'll realize, to your point, opportunities will start to present themselves.
Mm.
Yeah, you can look for it yourself for sure.
Yep.
You know, and that's important. But they come knocking, man. They come knocking. They look for you. At the same time, though, the more you do that, the more people gun for you. It's insane.
Mm.
Insane how many people look at you, what you've achieved, what you stand to achieve, and everything else, and they want to tear that down. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild. You know, there's so many things behind the scenes.
I struggle with that too, even on with social media, because like a lot of people say, you know, why do you post everything that you do? And it's a conscious choice that I make, because one, I do believe that we live in a world that even if you're not posting it, people are still going to find out about it anyway.
Right.
So I choose to do the actual opposite and just like, I'm going to expose myself, right? Go ahead, tear me down, do whatever you got to do, because I just now, but I know in the back of my head that you're going to be trolled. People are going to come after you. People are going to try to replicate what you're doing, which is actually a form of flattery. So that's good. Yeah. But it could be used against you too, you know? So I understand all that.
So when you make a little bit of money too, it's like everyone thinks they're owed something.
Mm.
You know, it's like, oh, how much more can I get out of it? They're doing all right. Oh, you have no idea
right.
what I do, what I have and everything. But the assumption is always there and everyone wants a part of it for nothing.
For nothing.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Mm.
There was something on the menu. I forget what it was, but you were like, yeah, this is very exclusive to PAX. And it was like you had to get basically authorized by Italy, right? Like,
oh, cool. Yeah, our pizza.
The pizza. Yeah, explain that. That was pretty cool. I wanna...
So the pizza that we offer there is called Pinsa Romana. P-I-N-S-A Romana is the name of the flour that we use and the style of pizza that we make. It's a Roman style. There's only one purveyor in Rome. There may be actually a few now, but one purveyor that manufactured and sold it. We incorporated that into our menu in the original restaurant. It's actually our chef at the time. He kind of pioneered it for us, and he's from, born and raised Rome. Still a good friend, great guy. But at the time, he's the one that introduced it to us. We ran with it. You know, we're in New York. Pizza is very easily found. So you wanted something that people knew, but it was also different enough to kind of separate you from everyone else and give people some options.
Mm-hmm.
So Pinsa Romana is a blend of soy, wheat, rice, sourdough flour. I'm not really big on soy. However, we import the flour, make the dough. The however stands behind a 72-hour fermentation of the dough. So now you're breaking it down. It's very palatable, very easy to digest, everything else. But it creates a very, very unique crust. And then the toppings are however you want to do the toppings. But that's the basis behind the crust.
But there's not many places that are doing this.
No, we were at the time that we adopted it, there was only three in the United States. And we were the very first on the East Coast. Now, I don't know, I would assume there's probably around a dozen. Oh, we were also 63rd, number 63 worldwide for it. And you get that certification from the distributor in Rome. You have to follow certain guidelines for a certain period of time, maintain it, and then you get your certification. So you don't just get the certification right off the get.
Right.
But through time, you know, as long as you maintain the standard, you're good.
I love it.
So, and it worked well.
Yeah, no, and it tastes delicious.
Thank you.
So for those of you guys who have not checked out PAX Romana in White Plains, I strongly encourage you to do so.
Appreciate
the rice
that.
Balls is a must.
The side of vodka sauce.
Side of vodka sauce is, oh my God. But yes, oh, absolutely, we should.
A little
we should
smoked
do it.
Bacon cooked right into the vodka Oof. Sauce.
Super elite. Anything that you want to, well, let me ask you this. I'm not going to give you an option. I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
What's the best advice you've ever received? And it could be like a quote. It could be a lesson, whatever it is.
I do have a good one, actually.
Give it to me.
I don't remember where I heard this quote, but
90% of people always say, yeah. I don't remember how it goes, or I don't remember.
I know the quote, but I don't remember where
I got it from. I do the same thing.
Your current circumstances don't dictate your outcome is one of my favorite quotes of all time. And I repeat that to myself every single day of my life. Mm. And it's absolutely true that your current circumstances don't mean anything for your future. You could have fucked up yourself, you know, things could have worked against you. Life could be against you in every which way possible. That does not determine anything about your life. What you put into it is going to determine everything. But the example that I give also when people do ask me this question, I take the original restaurant. It always goes back to the original restaurant. But it was a turning point in my life. At the time, you know, I had it taken away. Again, depression, anxiety, all the above. I was at the lowest point in my life. I was like, this is my dream of my entire life. And it got taken away in the stupidest, most ridiculous way possible. And at the time, I was like, what can be worse? What can be worse in my life? I was like, I'm $1 million in debt. I lost my dream. You know, I'm not going to go out this way. I'm going to fight for it. But like, I don't know if fighting for it's even going to work. But I'm going to try. But I thought it was the lowest point in my life. And at the time, it was. And now I look back at it and I'm like, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. I was like losing that first restaurant in the way that I did and how it built me as a human. It built my mind, built my body, you know, made me look at life differently. I didn't cower and run away. You know, it sparked something in me that has proven dozens and dozens of times over to have been the best thing that ever happened to me. And it's weird thinking of it like that, that my circumstances at the time, what I thought was my lowest, now is probably the best. Mm. So you can't just count yourself out because you face adversity, you know, because if you do put in the time and you do put in the effort and you build out of it, even if you just build yourself, you don't have to build another business, but you build yourself as a human, it'll be the best thing that ever happened to you, or it can be. So you have to allow it to. You have that control.
Period. Fire. I love that.
Yeah.
I appreciate you, my brother.
Likewise.
No, for real, man. I'm very excited to continue this relationship. I'm at a point in my life where I like to. I'm very intentional about who I spend my time with.
Yes. Agreed. Value.
You know, who? You're right. Because time, obviously, we never get back. Mm-hmm. And you're a person that I want to continue to develop the relationship.
Doing very
with.
Mutual. Absolutely.
So thank you, man, for coming.
My
on.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Guys, again, so if you have not checked it out, check out Pax Romana and White Plains. Oh, you know what, Paul? Let people know where to find you before we close out, please.
In what context?
I guess the restaurant. Yeah, not your home address. Not your home address and phone number. It might blow up. But your restaurant, Instagram pages and stuff like that, where people can connect with you.
Well, as far as the restaurant goes, we're at 171 East Post Road in White Plains. The IG handle is Pax Romana with an A at the end, underscore NY. They think that's the best way, honestly.
And then what about for you?
Contact? My personal?
Yeah. Not the cell phone number, just the Instagram.
The IG, Russo Paul underscore. Gotcha. Yeah. You see it pop right up.
Yeah, very cool. He was hesitant to give that one out. Yeah, we can leave that one out if you want.
It's up to you. You can leave it if you want.
Guys, as always, we're very grateful for you, the listener. We have one ask in 2024, and that is share the show. So if you found value in anything that Paulie said, I said, and at any time, share on Instagram, a text message to your friend, just giving them positive content to consume means the world to us. So we thank you. And as always, until next time, stop snoozing.
Get up and get after it.
That's Paulie, let's go eat some pasta, my brother.
Ready.
Let's go. Thank you guys for tuning in. That's another Epi in the Books. You can follow us on Instagram at No Snooze Podcast and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, No Snooze. Shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. Come on.